pride come into being through extended reflection on symbolic dimensions of the physical environment. Accordingly, features of the Apache landscape, their richly evocative names, and the many tribal narratives that recall their mythical importance are viewed as resources with which determined men and women can modify aspects of themselves, including most basically their own ways of thinking. And because changes in ways of thinking are mirrored by changes in patterns of conduct, these same individuals actually can be seen to alter who they are. As Apache men and women set about drinking from places, as they acquire knowledge of their natural surroundings, commit it to permanent memory, and apply it productively to the workings of their minds, they show by their actions that their surroundings live in them. Like their ancestors before them, they display by word and deed that beyond the visible reality of place lies a moral reality which they themselves have come to embody. And whether or not they finally succeed in becoming fully wise, it is this interior landscape, this landscape of the moral imagination, that most deeply influences their vital sense of place, and also, I believe, their unshakable sense of self. For where the likes of Dudley Patterson are concerned, and Sam Enfield, and Charles Cromwell, and the stalwart Talbot Paxton, selfhood and placehood are completely intertwined. Having developed a pace together, they are positive expressions of each other, opposite sides of the same rare coin, and their power to bind and fasten fast is nothing short of enormous. At no time, I suspect, is this power more surely felt by Western Apache people than during those sudden flashes of acute intuitive insight that mark the presence of wisdom. In these clairvoyant moments, when wise men and women consult traditional stories and seek to identify with sagacious story characters, their sense of place, and with it, perhaps their sense of self as well, may reach a kind of zenith. Yet such culminations of mind seem destined to occur with decreasing frequency in times that lie ahead. In communities throughout the Fort Apache Reservation, and Cibecue is prominent among them, fewer and fewer young people are currently embarking on the ancestral trail of wisdom, caught up with other concerns, and reluctant to appear old-fashioned before their watchful peers. They travel less extensively, learn smaller bodies of cautionary narratives, and subscribe with mounting conviction to the imported belief that useful knowledge comes mainly from formal schooling. This is not to imply that young Apaches fail to develop a robust sense of place. On the contrary, they do, but it does get fashioned from new and different materials and points in fresh directions. And that may be all to the good. For as modern tribal leaders point out repeatedly, surviving in the contemporary world requires the acquisition of contemporary skills. It is doubtful, however, that future generations of Apache people will ever devise a more striking way to think about places, and by means of places to think about thinking itself, than the one made known to me by the horseman Dudley Patterson. To him, of course, the Apache theory of wisdom was as familiar as the land he knew so well, as familiar to him as himself. But to me, a peripheral outsider, the model of Igoyai was a wonderful discovery, an absorbing cultural form of large and subtle dimensions, and so it has remained, as moving in its way and every bit as gripping as the largely unspoiled countryside from which it draws its strength. My own sense of place, which is not inconsiderable, rests in part upon it. Time will tell what other cultural constructions await the ethnographer bent on an interest in place, but that such constructions are everywhere to be found in deserts and savannas, mountains and rainforests, cities and rural towns, is altogether certain. We should begin to explore them with all deliberate speed, and not, I would emphasize, solely for the purpose of enlarging our knowledge of particular social groups. For as surely as place is an elemental existential fact, sense of place is a universal genre of experience, and therefore as more and more work gets done, it may be found to exhibit transcultural qualities. In this connection, I have already touched on a few possibilities, ubiquitously accepted as natural, normal, and unexceptional. Sense of place is variously trained, variably intense, and, having grown to mature proportions, stoutly resistant to change. Its complex affinities are more an expression of community involvement than they are of pure geography, and its social and moral force may reach sacramental proportions, especially when fused with prominent elements of personal and ethnic identity. Requiring neither extended analysis nor rational justification, sense of place rests its case on the unexamined premise that being from somewhere is always preferable to being from nowhere. All of us, it asserts, are generally better off with a place to call our own. Places, it reminds us, are really very good. That was his way. November 7th, 1992. Dudley Patterson joined the ancestors in the spring of 1983. His wake and funeral were attended by hundreds of people, some of whom came to Cibecue from many miles away. Sam Enfield, who no longer speaks of his absent friend and comrade, continues to work as a horseman. Charles Cromwell, hampered by arthritis and tired of herding cattle, recently called it quits at the age of 66. After two or three more drinking sprees, Talbert Paxton settled down and became a model of sobriety. He later married a distant cousin and now is the father of three exuberant children. Ruth Patterson, invincible as ever, remains firmly and fully in charge. On the evening Dudley was buried, not far from a place named Su Chihi Ule, flakes of mica flowed out. The spotted maverick bull appeared on the point of a sandstone bluff overlooking the cemetery. He stayed there, grazing lightly and occasionally looking down for the next 2 days and nights. Then he went away. He has not been seen again. Most people from Cibecue think the bull is dead. Ruth Patterson is not so sure. No one found his bones, she told me, not long ago over a cup of boiled coffee. The horsemen looked all over and no one found his bones. I think that spotted bull could still be alive. There are many places he could be, many places. A gentle smile crossed her face. He knew them all, you know. That was his way. Epilogue. The village of Cibecue has changed in many ways since the day I saw it first in 1959. The valley in which it sits is as lovely as ever. The earth is still as red, towering cottonwood trees still line the creek, and the vaulting sky above them is still immense and deep. The air is crystal clear, and the land for miles around, empty, implacable, majestically serene, looks very much the same. But expert horsemen no longer test their skills on herds of half-wild cattle. Fewer and fewer cornfields are planted every year, and the road to the highway, 12 miles away, has twice been widened and paved. Cars and pickups, on which everyone has come to depend, are common. Cibecue has a sawmill now, a handsome school, a supermarket, and a fire station, and a well-staffed medical clinic that tends to the needs of burgeoning numbers of children. And there are new houses everywhere, HUD houses, grouped into complexes, which their owners have furnished with widescreen TVs, expensive VCRs, and other conveniences of a fully modern sort. The village of Cibicue, open to the world after decades of seclusion, is fast becoming a town. A visitor to Cibicue today would discover that all of its housing complexes have been given English place names, fanciful names like Rainbow City, Too Far Away, Desert Storm, and Hollywood, and that each name has a story behind it, amusing and lighthearted, which provides an account of its origin. During the 1991 conflict with Iraq, for example, the complex at Desert Storm was engulfed in a summer squall. At its height, an inspired Apache matron, having proclaimed she was General Shortstuff, barked military-style orders from the porch of her house to a little boy across the street who refused to get in from the rain. "Get to your tanks, men! Go to your tanks! Get out of Desert Storm!" Thus, the name was born. And thus, understandably, the visitor might suppose that the business of naming places is no longer taken seriously by Apaches, that it has fallen by the cultural and linguistic wayside, a casualty of modern times, and accelerated exposure to non-Apache ways. But such is not the case. Traditional place names have recently been made, and will surely be made again, wherever events of pervasive moral significance happen to occur. And no one living in Cibicue doubts for a moment that this is as it should be. On a late spring day a few years ago, an Apache youth from Cibicue spent the morning fishing on the upper reaches of Cibicue Creek. He caught several trout, which he strung on a stick by their gills and carried to a spot where he planned to fish some more. There he placed his catch on a tiny spit of sand. Suddenly, a mature bald eagle bolted from the sky, and sacred bird and impulsive youth fought for the trout lying beside the stream. The eagle won. The young man was badly raked, and a year or so later, one of his maternal uncles bestowed a commemorative place name on the small patch of sand. He named it Itzachia Itule, Eagle Hurdles Down. Another Apache place name came into being that day, and another historical tale, which advises never to challenge eagles, now hints tersely at some of the reasons why. Those who speak with names have one more name to work with, and those who imagine place worlds in the future will have one more world to construct. The Western Apache youth, now grown to manhood, is presently in training to become a ceremonial singer. Everyone in Cibicue who has heard him perform comments on the clarity and intention of his voice. Some people say he may one day be wise. The ancestors, no doubt, are watching.
This concludes Wisdom Sits in Places, by Keith H. Basso. Narrated by Stephen J. Cohen. Copyright 1996 by the University of New Mexico Press. This unabridged audiobook is published by arrangement with University of New Mexico Press and was produced in the year 2018 by Tantor Media, Incorporated, a division of Recorded Books, which holds the copyright thereto. Please visit Tantor.com for more information on our growing library of unabridged audiobooks.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.